Well, Nick, I'll say this about the 2025 Toronto Blue Jays. You can never really count them out. I mean, win or lose, this is a team that when you compare them to even just last year, they are basically in every single game. I mean, whether they're down by a little or a lot, I mean, there's a reason to watch or listen all the time, all the way to the end. And they did it again today. Their 19th comeback win of the season. Hyneman features prominently, George Springer delivering the massive home run late, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. adding what we thought was an insurance run off of Yoan Duran, of all people, ended up being very important after all, considering it stood up as the game winner. A 5-4 win, Jays win the series. They are now 35-29. They are a season best 6 games above 500. Another comeback win for the Comeback Kings, it would seem.
Yeah, and that's not a description you would have used for this team earlier in the season when the offense was really depressed. And to be honest, when you started the year, you thought, you know, Bo and Vladdy are guys who are going to be above average offensively. And the rest of the guys, you had a lot of defense-oriented players. You had guys like, you know, Springer, obviously, great example. Someone who'd been sort of okay offensively for the last couple of years. Suddenly, you know, Springer has been an offensive force in the middle of the lineup. This is a guy who started out hot, hit a bit of a dip. I think a lot of people believed that, okay, you know, it was a hot start, whatever. He's going to go back to doing what he was doing. And now he's rebounded. He's got 5 home runs in his last 11 games. Barger is emerging. You're getting contributions. You know, Hyneman, we talked about before the game. You don't expect this from him. You can't expect this from anyone. He's hitting like Babe Ruth out there. It will end eventually. But, you know, the Blue Jays can ride that hot bat while they can. Huge hits from him in this game. And on the pitching side, too, you know, Gausman, quality start, not his best, but he kept them in the game. Braden Fisher, the biggest outing of his career, keeping that lead intact. And then, you know, Hoffman at the end, again, not an outing he'll feel spectacular about, but got the job done.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Yeah, George Springer, 2-run bomb in the 8th, second time in as many days that Springer has hit a home run, Nick. He now has 10 home runs and 27 RBI. You know, I'm not quite sure that he would be an all-star in the American League. It just, if you look at the production of a lot of the outfielders, only in the American League, and I mean, like, there's a lot of really outstanding results, certainly in the AL this year. But I'll say this, you are getting the best version of Springer now, certainly than you've gotten in a few weeks, because he started off, to your point, so hot, and then he cooled off, right? I mean, had he continued hitting the way he started the year, he'd be like the unanimous American League MVP, right? Like, that was never going to be ultra sustainable. But I think not only are you getting the best version of Springer that we've seen for about maybe like 3-4 weeks or so, but you're also getting, I think, one of the best versions of Springer I think you've seen in his time in Toronto, period. And I think the early tenure of Springer's time in TO was marred a little bit by injury, right? I mean, there was that point, especially after his first year, where every time he came down in center field, you kind of like held your breath a little to see if he was going to twist his ankle or something. But he's been pretty healthy in the last couple of years, certainly this year. And he is really hitting the baseball really well. I've been very impressed by what Springer has been able to do. It seems, again, with, and I don't want to attribute it only to a new hitting coach or anything like that. I think it's a large part of it has to do with him himself, certainly, a guy who's had a lot of success as a major leaguer. But I mean, Springer has not been afraid to get to 2 strikes. He's been ambushing pitches, ambushing mistakes when pitchers do throw him meatballs. I mean, that's not something we had seen from Springer in the last couple of years.
When you think about a 35-year-old player, you generally assume, okay, we have seen the best of this guy. It is only about how much can he mitigate his decline, not that he's going to have a really, really strong season. And the story of his Blue Jays career in terms of its trajectory is that when he came out in 2021, when he was on the field, he was spectacular as a power threat, like truly one of the better power threats in the league, but there was difficulty staying healthy that season. And basically every year since then, the power just gets sapped. a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And that's kind of what happens to some guys as they get older, especially because it seemed like he was making an effort to keep the contact up, try right. and stay getting on base. Might have been a bit of a leadoff hitter mindset, to be honest, because that's the guy he'd been for the vast majority of his career. And then this season, what you see with him is that he's not so concerned about making sure the ball's in play no matter what. And he's not afraid to take the huge cut, even if it results in a whiff. Like, he has swung and missed significantly more than the average hitter this season. But it's not a problem, because when he connects, he's connecting and hitting the ball with authority. And that's a more interesting, more fun to watch, and more effective version of George Springer, the one who wants to swing from the heels, is not afraid to make mistakes, is not overly concerned about avoiding the strikeout at every turn, but is instead saying, these are pitches I can do damage on. I believe in myself. I'm backing myself. I'm giving it the best swing I've got. And you know what? If I end up walking back to the dugout, that's okay. It helps, too, that he's taking his walks and he's not chasing bad yes. pitches. Like, yes. that is a part of the story as well. But this power decline had been so prevalent for almost half a decade here, and he's really reversed it in a way that you can't help but be impressed with.
You brought up something really interesting, the idea that maybe the mindset he was going through while things were declining and he's figuring out how to navigate losing power as his career gets on, that maybe it's a part of being the top of the order mindset, just getting on base. And that's definitely something that he had to change, obviously, no longer being the top of the order batter. But it's interesting, too, because I think this year in particular, Nick, we're seeing him DH a little bit more. And it's good good in the sense that right now you can do that because there is no Varsho, there is no Santander. And I think Santander would also, when he is playing, when he's healthy, he would occupy some DH days, certainly. Other guys would as well. Like, if you ever wanted to get Kirk and Heinemann in there, that's something you could use. But Springer, I think, has seen a good chunk of DH spots this season. And I think when he's DHing, like, I've had this conversation with other people in the sense that there are some players that I think need to be in the field in order to feel like they are in rhythm, right? In order to feel like they're their best selves at the plate. And I've heard that's the kind of player Santander is, for example, which is why we actually hadn't seen as many DH starts for Santander when healthy, of course, as maybe we expected when the signing happened in the offseason. Springer might kind of looking like he's the opposite, right? He's almost hitting better when he's a DH, which is funny because, again, like, I'm not going to call it ideal because you'd rather have Santander and Varsho hit for you. But when you are putting Springer in the DH spot, you can kind of finagle a way to get all of Barger, Clement, and Jimenez and other people onto the field as well, because Springer's not taking up a spot in right field. It's fascinating to see how he's changed as a DH, because that's where he was today.
That idea of struggling to hit when you're a DH sounds counterintuitive, right? Because there is less work to be done. You are focusing only on being a hitter. Why wouldn't you hit better? You're better rested. You all have all the time in the world to study the pitcher, even in between innings. But what we've seen over time is that there's something called the DH penalty. Guys literally hit worse when they're DH in total. Now, there are some guys who adapt to the role and figure it out mentally and become very good at it. But generally speaking, guys hit worse than their average when they aren't in the field as well. So when you find a player who seems able to take that on mentally, it can be a really helpful and underrated thing for a team. Now, when Santander is back, I think the difference between Santander and Springer in terms of what they offer in the field, you'd like to have Springer taking those days in right field, and you'd like to have Santander DHing more. But they may come to find over time that Santander, as you kind of referred to, isn't as suited to that DH life, and they might have to take a bit of a sacrifice in right field defense at times to, you know, fit these players into the positions that is best for them mentally, even when it might not seem ideal when you kind of count out the defensive value.
I think, too, and Blair and Barker have talked about this a lot, but if you can get two of your three outfield spots, and ideally one of those spots is center field, but if you can get two of those three spots to be taken up by very sound defensive outfielders, I think you can, to a certain extent, take a little bit of a hit. Ideally, you'd take no hits, right? But if you have to sacrifice and play that game, then, you know, I think, I mean, at least for now, Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas, both pretty defensively sound. You know, Jonathan Class A, take some questionable routes out there, perhaps. I mean, I'm not sure worthy enough to get sent down, at least right now, but, I mean, probably going to happen at some point, especially when Varsho and Santander are both healthy. But, yeah, I mean, I think you can live with that trade-off if you had to put Santander in right field and DH Springer, for example, if you are still getting like Gold Glove caliber defense from Varsho or frankly Miles Straw, who's just as good, honestly, or just slightly worse if we're comparing, you know, splitting hairs here. But yeah, I think that's probably a sacrifice the team would be willing to make, I'm guessing.
And if we zoom out a little bit, I think this discussion in itself goes to show how far this team has come, where we're talking about good players coming into the lineup and you're thinking, how do you move guys around?
Right,
like, how do you find at bats or people? You know, earlier in the season when Varsho was going to come back, the thought was like, just didn't need a bat. They need someone to come back. And, you know, Varsho is not some bat who is going to be the savior for your lineup, although he's been very good when healthy this season. But the fact that we are talking about moving all these pieces around goes to show that, yeah, when they get Santander back, when they get Varsho back, and assuming Santander is going to be better than he was earlier in the season, which feels like a fair assumption just because he set a low bar, it will be intriguing to see how they move all these pieces around the outfield, because most of the guys they have are hitting pretty well right now. Like, there really aren't holes in the lineup. Jimenez, you could argue, but that's a little bit baked into his skill set. And in whether it's an outfield or around the infield, the idea that it's tricky to find playing time and at-bats for people and that fitting people is a problem is just an indication that this position player group has come a long way.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. I'll go to the text line in a sec, but let's kick things off on the phones, Nick. Let's go to Nova Scotia and chat with Bob. Bob, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hi, that was a great win, but I just want to talk about one thing. Ryan Yarbrough, I think, was a major mistake by trying to let him go at the start of the year. He's got a 2.83 ERA, and he's starting for the New York Yankees. How good would he look in a Blue Jay uniform right now?
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Bob, I appreciate the call on Ryan Yarbrough. Thanks for joining us. I admit, like, after a win like this, Ryan Yarbrough is not what I what I thought we were going to be talking about. I understand the thought process, though, because it would certainly solve, at least in theory, it would solve this issue that we're talking about when it comes to the 4-5 spots. And I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. We're going to probably talk about it, win or lose. I think you're going to talk about it a little bit tomorrow because Bowden Francis is going tomorrow. And I'm not saying like you're counting that as a loss, just in the sense that he has struggled. And unless he like really turns it around, you're still going to be talking about it. But yeah, I mean, Ryan Yarbrough has turned around. He had a really rough start, if I remember right. So that he even has an ERA that starts with a 2, I think, is very impressive for him. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I think the bullpen issue, the bullpen days, they've been able to win. Maybe that's not quite as sustainable, and having Yarbrough would help with that. But I don't know. I admit, super high on my list of concerns. I admit, Nick.
The combination of Lauer and Paxton Schultz have kind of approximately given you what Yarbrough's given you. Now, that doesn't mean that having Yarbrough would be a problem. He is the sort of guy, he can give you a spot start. He can give you 4 innings in relief. He's got that rubber arm. Last season, he got 98.2 innings out of the bullpen, which is just an incredibly impressive number in today's MLB. He's probably an underappreciated player, to be honest, because he really doesn't throw hard, because he doesn't miss bats. He's just not valued by MLB teams that highly, and you know, credit to the Yankees, they scooped him up and he's played a useful role for them. But I don't think he's a star player who's moving the needle too much in terms of the fortunes of the team, especially when you consider that the Jays have gotten good work from the bullpen and good work from long relievers in general. Now, yeah, the 2 spots in the rotation outside of Gosman, Barrios, and Bassett are an issue, and they're going to continue to be an issue until there's either an internal option, whether that's Scherzer getting healthy, Manoah later in the season, or something that happens externally. Like, it's not an acceptable state of affairs you would want to head into the playoffs with, for instance, but at the same time, I think over the course of the season, you believe things are going to change there.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Rich in Fort Erie. Rich, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was just wondering. I know Guerrero's playing great at first base, but I don't know. I think he should be dropped down a couple spots.
What are you thinking? Like, where would you put him?
I don't know, 4th or 5th. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, like, I appreciate the call.
Some of them, yeah, some other guys hitting good, and I don't know. It's probably just me, but I think you should move down a bit.
Rich, appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. Hey, look, you know what? I will say, when he said dropping down in the order, I thought Rich was going to say, like, we need a Vladdy, like, 8th or something, which obviously is not going to happen. Like, I don't think there's a terrible case to be made for Vladdy batting like fourth, for example, right? I don't think we've seen about a ton of cleanup in his career. I know a lot of people have texted in before, Nick, to say that like the optimal batting spot for Vladdy, how much, depending on how much you believe in these kinds of things, is not second, but third. And I can get behind seeing that. I don't think it's going to make personally like the biggest of differences. But yeah, I personally probably wouldn't bat Vladdy lower than cleanup, but I'm curious what you think.
Honestly, it's really a philosophical question about how much do you want to prioritize what people are doing this second, right, and how much do you want to prioritize what guys are capable of doing or their kind of overall talent level. Because in my view, there's no doubt that he is the most talented hitter in the lineup. He is not performing as the best hitter in the lineup this season yet. Honestly, a couple weeks, a torrid stretch where he hits a few home runs, it would not take long. Like his overall stats are good. They're not unbelievable. Right. Like it's been not as much power as you'd like, right? Like that is a complaint about Vladdy that people have, and it is a valid complaint. The second spot in the order is where you want to put your best hitter. That is a conventional wisdom, and he is not their best hitter right now. But the contract they handed him is a pretty strong indication they see him as their best hitter, and I think his career track record also says that. So I would be inclined to be patient with him, but I understand that in this moment he might not feel as imposing just because that's not what he's been so far this season. But I think it's going to come around.
I do think, too, and again, the result turns at the end to the point where the insurance runoff of Durant ends up being quite important, right? And we can talk about Jeff Hoffman a little later on the pitching side of that equation. But top of the seventh inning, Jimenez gets on with a single. Class A strikes out. Heinemann gets on again. And we should talk about Heinemann because, man, what a game he had. But Bo and Vladdy come up. So they have one out and two on, one out, right? Top of the seventh inning. You're trailing at this point because this is pre-George Springer bomb, which can't happen in the following inning. Bo strikes out swinging. He's deemed to have gone around, so he walks back to the dugout. And Vladdy comes up, and in two pitches, he like weakly crowds out to Carlos Correa. And I think in that moment, even here in the studio, I turned to you and said, "Oh boy, that's a tough look. Like we're gonna get some calls and comments about that today." And we have, and I'm not saying Rich is incorrect by any means to not feel ultra confident in Vladdy. I tend to believe, like you, that it will come, but I do think this is like these kinds of discussions are just gonna happen when you get paid I know it doesn't kick in until next year, but hundreds of millions of dollars, and the CEO of Rogers comes out at your press conference and says like the ROI on this is winning a World Series because we believe in this guy, right? And I think that's whether it's fair or not, carries higher expectations. And I think it's magnified when, you know, like Heinemann has a monster home run in a game and Springer, an aging Springer, is having one of those better seasons in years. And, you know, you're getting contributions, pretty consistent contributions from the bottom of the order. Bo is coming around. I mean, Bo is leading the team in RBI, right? So, like, I think when all of these things are happening and you're not getting that also from the guy who's getting paid the most by a lot on the club, I can understand these kinds of discussions.
He is the face of the franchise, and he has not only been not their best overall player, because it's difficult for him as a first baseman to sometimes be that when guys are making the two-way contribution. We talked before the game about Alejandro Kirk, for instance, and Alejandro Kirk is hitting .350 for a month and also one of the best defensive catchers in the world. It's just really hard for a first baseman to match that overall value. So there'll be times when Vladdy isn't the most valuable individual player, but he is the most valuable hitter. He needs to be that over the course of this contract. And there might be some seasons where he doesn't reach that standard, but he needs to do it consistently. And right now he isn't the best hitter on the team, as I said, and he hasn't been particularly close. You know, Springer, for instance, has been significantly better than him. And so those expectations will weigh on him a little bit. That spotlight will be on him, and people are going to hold him to a high standard. If he was a rookie doing what he's doing now, people would say, wow, great hitter. He's getting on base all the time and smashing line drives everywhere. Like, what a fantastic player to have. And he makes acrobatic plays at first base. Great. But again, with the context of the contract, with the context of the fact that they are building explicitly around him, which is a bit controversial, to be honest, based on his position, the bar is higher than what he's shown so far. But we're also not that deep into the season. I think even superstar players can have a couple months where they are more good than great, and that's just what we're seeing from Vladdy right now.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Burlington. Kyle joining us in Burlington. Kyle, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, boys. First time, long time. I just wanted to get on here and give George Springer a shout out because... Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Get a couple, an all-star season out of him and then have the decline, but seeing him hit hard hit percentage at 49.6% right now, right around 50%. Super impressive. Best of his career so far. I know it's not even halfway through the season, so we expect it to go down a little bit, but super happy for him. Really excited about it. And yeah, I'll be the first one to apologize about it. Let's go, George.
Hey, Kyle, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, we were talking about Springer earlier, Nick. I do wonder what the future holds for Springer, right? Because I remember having this conversation it was during spring training, just with, you know, we took some calls and we did Jays Talk during the spring, and Springer did have a pretty hot spring campaign as well. But I remember having these conversations even, like, you know, before, when all the signings are happening in the offseason, and people are kind of wondering, like, what can you do with Springer? And I feel like we're just, like, so far away from those discussions now. Like, we were having discussions, like, especially when he cooled off just a couple of weeks ago, like, oh man, could the Jays eat his contract in the offseason to free up some money? I mean, we're worlds away, it feels like, from that conversation. And again, like, to Kyle's point, I mean, there's a lot of baseball left. The peaks and valleys of the season are pretty high, and sometimes they're pretty far in between. So maybe we get back to that at some point. But right now, it feels like we're way far away from that.
There's always been, I think, the team leaning in on Springer as opposed to leaning out. Obviously, a huge part of that is the contract. But also, he's a good ambassador for the team. He's considered to be a respected veteran, a good clubhouse guy. Like, I think that even as he has struggled a little bit, the team has seen a certain amount of value in him that you can't necessarily measure in terms of what he does on the field. But it's hard to make that argument when a guy starts creeping into his middle 30s and you don't necessarily see him as a starting caliber everyday player anymore. And that's the direction he seemed to be going. Like, he seemed to be going towards being a guy who had, you know, average ability at the plate at best. And I'm talking over a 2-year span, right? It's not just something that happened a couple months. You know, average ability at the plate, and then getting older and his ability to field was kind of only going to decline. And at a certain point, even if you're paying a guy a lot of money, and even if you like what he brings to the clubhouse, rolling him out as an everyday player just doesn't make sense. And if he had really, really struggled this season a couple months in, but the team had been looking to compete, there might have been an argument, like you said, for eating his contract, trying to ship him out somewhere, I don't know, maybe to a younger team that was willing to take some of his contract and a mid-level prospect or something like that just to get off of it. And the idea of getting off a George Springer contract right now, again, just doesn't make any sense, because he's been arguably the team's best hitter. And, like, he's, you know, his power threat right now is a big deal for a lineup that hasn't struggled to hit home runs lately,
yeah,
but still is not exactly full of 30-plus home run sluggers.
590-590, name and location is the people's text line. I think we've waited long enough to talk about Tyler Heineman. And
too long.
I would agree with you. And I see here, okay, so a couple of texts on Heineman. Okay, so David North Vancouver, Tyler Heineman to the All-Star game? ? Brad in Nova Scotia on the other side of Canada. There was chatter today about the biggest surprise on the Jays. It was a tie for me between Straw and Heineman. I think I'll give the nod to Heineman. I expected absolutely zero from him this year. This is a bonus. Saves Kirk in the process. Every other position has depth. Catcher, not so much. And Derek in Strathroy says, Cal Raleigh, who? That's pretty good. I do like it. Look, I mean, I'll say this for Tyler Heineman. I mean, we spent, you know what? I won't attribute this to you. I'll attribute this only to me. I spent about, like, 5 to 6 minutes on the pregame show today detailing how a bunch of Heineman's production is unsustainably lucky. And then in his first plate appearance today, he comes up there and just blasts an absolute bomb. I mean, this is a guy before this year, Nick, who had what? One career home run, I think, prior to this year. And he has two this year alone. Now, I know that's not a lot. Don't get me wrong. We're still talking about a backup catcher this year. But, I mean, gosh, in games he has now played, because obviously he doesn't play all the time, he has now actually had multiple hits in each of the last three games in which he has gotten a start. That's honestly incredible for a guy who is a career backup catcher. Well done by Heineman.
It's pretty incredible. He deserves all the credit in the world. Again, will this hold up? No, but mainly in the sense that no one is this good, right? He's hitting 429 after this game. He's got an OPS well over...
Move over Johnny Bench.
Yeah, he's got an OPS well over 1,000. Move over Babe Ruth. Like, this is some of the best numbers you can imagine in an era where it's pretty hard to get hits. And he's thrown out more than half the base runners who've tried to steal against him as well. And he's done all the things you expected him to do. You expected him to be a solid veteran catcher who would know the staff, block the plate, throw the ball. Like, that's what you were paying his very minimal salary for, was to do those baseline things. And literally anything he gave you with a bat, you say, thank you very much. That's fantastic. And he has given them so much more than they really ever could have reasonably imagined. And just, yeah, it's a ton of credit to him. I mean, I don't know if you can even credit the ball club for identifying that he might do something like this, because even if you ask them, you know, put truth serum in Ross Atkins and say, what kind of offensive season are you expecting out of Tyler Heineman in 2025? I think he would have told you something extremely modest, and what he's done is not even remotely modest. It's hard to know the words for it. It will even out. It will not last to a certain extent, but you can't take away from the guy what he's done, and what he's done has been by far the best backup catcher in baseball and one of the better catchers overall in terms of value, just because the offense is so dramatic.
Yeah, he's batting after today, he's batting 429, and he has an OPS well over 1,000. I mean, that's crazy, Nick, right? I tend to believe it's not sustainable, mainly because, again, like, even if Aaron Judge was doing this, I think we'd be like, yeah, it's probably not sustainable, right? So I think that he is accomplishing what he's accomplishing is incredible too. And you mentioned some of the non-offensive aspects of Heineman's game, right? I mean, we were talking about this on the pregame show, but Heineman good at corralling pitchers, whether it's pitchers he has worked with a lot in the minors or pitchers that have not spent a lot of time with him in the minors, whether it's the starters, whether it's relievers. He is good at holding the runners. I mean, he is good at, I think, not just calling games, but when I think he seems to, at the very least, like, this is just using the eye test here, but he does seem to have a good sense of knowing when to go out there. And this is, I think, an aspect of just being a veteran catcher who's been around the majors and minors for a really long time. But, you know, he knows when to go out there and give his pitchers a chance to calm down and just take a little bit of a mental reset, right? I mean, we saw it with Gausman today after Gausman had that particularly acrobatic play where Vladdy from the seat of his pants threw Gausman the pitch and then he had to reach back and still tap his right foot on the bag. And then you saw Heineman go out there and give him a breather on the mound shortly after that. Certainly with Hoffman as well, after he gives up the home run, you see him like pointing down and really, you know, directing traffic out there. So I'll give Heineman all the credit in the world. I got to say, again, like, backup catcher, I think by the end of the season, what, he'll probably have caught 50 games in that range, right? But still, I mean, if you're playing the way he's playing, it's hard not to shout him out.
And in this game, what he did at the plate were things that, you have to give him a lot of credit for, regardless of what you think his long-term prognosis is. Like, he hit a home run over 400 feet, the longest hit he'd ever had in the major league level. His second hit, that was in an 0-2 count, a single. His third hit, above the zone at 101 miles an hour, and he managed to poke it the other way. Like, some of his hits, yeah, they have blooped in and fallen in, and he's gotten the benefit of some luck. But in terms of this individual game, what he did was critical to the Blue Jays' success in terms of the runs that he scored, in terms of the home run and then scoring that run on the Vladdy single. But also the way he did it at the plate was legitimately impressive, too.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Lots of calls, actually. Let's get to the calls again, Nick. Eric in Alberta joining us here. Eric, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jays Talk.
Hey, Nick and show. I just wanted to shout out Tyler Heineman again, like you guys have. I also wanted to point out that in that fourth inning when Gausman kind of got in a heated argument with the umpire, Heineman stepped up and got in between the umpire and Kevin Gausman to prevent Gausman from getting ejected. I think that's also goes underrated. He is also the OPS leader on the Jays with a minimum 50 plate appearance at 1066, which is unbelievable for what you're getting from the backup catcher. I just wanted to shout him out for that sort of stuff today.
Absolutely, Eric. Thank you for joining us on Jays Talk. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, Tyler Heineman, leader of men right now, Nick.
I mean, yeah. What more can you say? if Gausman had been tossed also from the game, the Blue Jays would have been in real trouble because it was a bullpen game the night before. Like, they kind of needed Gausman to go deep in this game. And I'm not sure if Heinemann's intervention was the thing that prevented that from happening. But again, a nice little thing to shout out for him. His WRC plus right now, which is a great kind of overall offensive stat, it adjusts for era, ballpark, yada, 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 is 204. Mm. There is no major league player in MLB history who has a career WRC plus of 204 or better. So if he keeps this up, there will be an argument to be made. He is the greatest hitter of all time.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's continue taking your calls. Let's go to Kitchener. Jeff joining us in Kitchener. Jeff, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
How's it going today, guys?
Good. Yeah, always fun when you can talk about another series win, right?
100%. I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on this because I came across an article this week, just kind of scrolling through, and they were mentioning about Atkins and Shapiro in their final contract years, and also mentioning about the fact that Bo Bichette may not be interested in signing an extension. He may want to do the free agent route. Would you guys take a flyer after the Yankees came in for Canada Day and see if maybe picking up the phone and chatting with Preston Mattingly in Philadelphia, possibly for Mick Abel or Andrew Painter for Bo Bichette? Will you guys entertain that?
Hey, Jeff, I appreciate the call. I love me some fake trades. I will say this, Nick. Fake trades are one of my favorite things to do in any sport. So one for one for Abel or Andrew Painter. I will say Painter was supposed to be, from what I recall, he was supposed to be one of like the sexier pitching prospects. And then I think he just ran into a bunch of injuries. I don't know if it was only Tommy John or if it was something else, but I do think he had some like elbow surgery, I want to say, at some point. Of course, we just saw Abel, I mean, like two starts at that point after walking like a million guys in the minors. So he's excellent in the majors. So kudos to Abel. I'll say this. I mean, the Phillies have always been very, very, very aggressive. I'm not sure the Blue Jays. Okay. I do like the idea because I love the idea of big swings personally, but I do think if you're where the Jays are and if they're anywhere close to six games above 500, I can't imagine around Canada Day, I should say, I can't imagine they're going to be sellers like at all, even for someone like Bo.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining that as well. I think this front office, they're trying to get their extensions, right? And so they are incentivized to have this team win and do well enough that it would seem odd to fire them and go with a different group at the end of the year. Even beyond that, honestly, unfortunately, putting some cold water on it, you'd be disappointed what you get for rental players at this point. Like, MLB teams really, really value a player with term. And trading half a season of Bo Bichette, it's not like you get nothing for him, but I don't think you get those top right. end young pitchers who are projected to be kind of middle, if not better, top of the rotation type of starters. Teams are really, really reluctant to let go of those players, and rightfully so. And the Blue Jays would love to have some of those guys. Like, the Blue Jays do not have a lot in the way of young pitchers that they can rely on. Trey Savage is obviously doing some really impressive things in the minor leagues right now, but these are rare prospects we're talking about. And generally, when those type of prospects move, it's for guys with multiple years of term on their contracts remaining.
I do think Jeff is onto something though, because if the offense stays where it has been, and I mean, it'll probably fluctuate throughout the season, but given where it's at now, you certainly feel a lot better about it now than when we were having conversations like this in, early to mid April, I would say. But if the offense stays where it is now, Nick, I do wonder when we get to the trade deadline, if the biggest need for this team will not in fact be a bat like we thought it would be, but in fact would be starting pitching, right? And I mean, certainly bullpen as well. And I mean, Chad Green's outing today, I know he didn't give up a run, but Chad Green loading the bases did not inspire me with an abundance of confidence, I'll say. And I don't think you're going to be able to inspire anyone else to take, even at a discount, Chad Green, and he's a free agent next year anyway. So I'm sure that's a big part of the equation for him. But starting pitching, relief pitching, probably a much easier add than any sort of impact bat. I mean, because think about it. I mean, like, when was the last time you saw a bat acquired at the deadline be a major contributor on the way to a World Series title? And I mean, if you really expand that, I mean, when was the last time, even in like hockey, for example, the Stanley Cup final going on, what you could see like a big time goal scorer acquired at the deadline, not named Brad Marchand, I guess, and lead your team to big moments in the playoffs, right? I guess Mikko Rantanen was almost there, I suppose, but the Stars are not playing in the Stanley Cup final. It just doesn't happen that often offensively. I feel like it happens, especially in baseball, far more frequently from a pitching perspective.
I think that's fair. I remember when the Dodgers acquired Manny Machado and I thought, oh, you might as well give him the World Series at this point, and that did not work out that way. You could do something creative with Bichette. Again, I don't expect this to happen, but you could make a case that, you know, Ernie Clement can play shortstop. You could argue that Jimenez would be able to play shortstop as well if you really did have a little bit of an offensive surplus, which, again, let's not get ahead of ourselves just because they're on a hot streak right now. But if you felt like you had that surplus, but the rotation was still a concern and there was a way to upgrade the rotation and bullpen, maybe with guys who had a little bit of term and then you shift Bo Bichette out the other way. You don't often see that where teams that are trying to contend, try to make the playoffs, trade quality MLB players who are currently on the roster. But you can, in theory, sort of move value from one part of your team to the other. That would be a creative way to approach the deadline. Again, I really don't expect it to happen, but from a theoretical perspective, I can see it.
Yeah, like if the Jays were like 6 games under 500 at the deadline, I think we'd be entertaining Bo being traded a lot more.
Absolutely.
Right? But I think where they are right now, it's probably not going to happen. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Brendan in Edmonton joining us here on Jays Talk. Brendan, what's up?
Hey, show, Nick. I just wanted to give a shout out to Kevin Gausman and the really quality outing he gave us today. I know it's 3 earned runs over 6, but still, like, the history with him against Minnesota over the last, well, since he's been a Blue Jay, at least since 2022, has not been very good. And clearly he was battling a little bit today, but other than, I think, that one inning where they loaded the bases and the hit-by-pitch and the walk to get the second run in, I thought he looked pretty good in every inning out there. Like that sink, the splitter was really diving down, I thought, a lot today. The fastball velocity after the first inning was pretty consistently 94 and up, which is another good sign. I wonder where this rotation is going to be in the next coming years, because you look at Bassett, his contract is up after this season, Gausman's after next season, and I think Berríos still has another, 3 years left?
And Berríos, he does have an opt-out in there too, so that's always a possibility.
Yeah, like the rotation is going to need some guys to come in. I mean, like, obviously Trejasevich, we're going to see at the end of the year what Alek Manoah looks like. And then, I mean, like, all the guys that keep getting hurt at the minor league level, Tiedemann, Barriera, like, how many guys we've drafted in the first round as a starting pitcher and just all need some kind of elbow surgery. It's insane. But, one of these guys is going to have to come in and try and fill some of these holes that are being created in the rotation.
Hey, appreciate the call, Brendan. Thank you for joining us. I'm with Brendan, Nick, on the idea that you need at some point, right? At some point, you need one of these pitchers you have drafted to pan out, or at least like just come up and throw some innings in the majors, right? Like just one of them. And I think we were talking about this off air, but I mean, the Jake Bloss injury, I think, really did throw a wrench in what could have been a solution, as we're seeing now, right? Bullpen days, Bowden Francis struggling to a certain extent. So it is a little tough on that end. So I think you do hope that Trejasevich is the real deal. And I mean, guy, just last night, he made another start for the Vancouver Canadiens and carved their opponent up like a Thanksgiving turkey. So I think you probably expect at some point, even this year, maybe, I mean, if things continue to go as well as they've gone for him, he'll pitch in low A, high A, might even pitch in double A at some point this year, considering how he's ripping up the minors. But again, he's probably still not super close to coming in, but to Brendan's point, the rotation is something that's going to have to be addressed. Now, that is something I think you can also, to a certain extent, fix with like money, essentially. And Bass is coming off the books. Scherzer, you would assume, is coming off the books. Chad Green, who we talked about, he's coming off the books. That's like almost $40 million, $35 to $40 million, if I remember correctly, just with those three guys. So you can probably fix that issue a little bit in the short term with like money as a band aid, but you do need them to get some of the the innings from the minors. Gausman today, though, right? First spot of trouble, I should say, for him came in the bottom of the fourth. I mean, single to Jeffers after a quick out, single to Jeffers, single to Correa, walks Wallner, hits Ty France on an 0-2 count, and then walks Roy Lewis after falling behind 3-0. So he really did struggle to locate the zone. That he only gave up three runs, I think, is a testament to him battling, and well done. I mean, it was the most runs you can give up in a quality start, but he got a quality start with over 100 pitches. I mean, impressive of Gausman to battle against a team that is he has historically struggled against.
It was actually a pretty similar story as we've seen with Gausman and the Twins in the past, right? Like his velocity was there. The fastball looked good, and that's what got him through a lot of the early part of the game. He was getting a lot of ground balls with his fastball, which is not really traditionally his game. But I think he identified early on that they were laying off the splitter. Like, the splitter looked good. The movement was there. It was falling off the table. It was that slower splitter we talked about before the game. But the difference was that the Twins just did not really swing at it. They only swung 14 times on 34 splitters. And so I think he identified early in the game, like, to get these outs in these crucial situations, I really need to lean on my fastball. And generally speaking, that worked. And then you got to that inning that you laid out, and, you know, the 0-2 hit batter, that's brutal. That's going to keep him up at night. That helped extend the inning. Then you have that walk, which again is not what you want to see from him. But he didn't really have his best weapon, or at least it wasn't effective in this game. And so when he doesn't have his splitter at its, you know, highest capacity, then he is very reliant on the fastball. And the fastball today was, generally speaking, pretty good. And it was good enough to get him through a quality lineup, as you said, get that quality start, proverbially keep his team in the game. Like, he did not leave with the lead. He did not put the Blue Jays in a position where they are way ahead of the Twins, but he kept them in the game and they were able to come back. It's not going to be his favorite start when he looks back on the season. He's not going to have wistful nostalgia about this outing, but he did what's asked of a pitcher, which is to keep your team in the game, give them a chance to win. The Blue Jays won today in large part because of what he was able to do.
I mean, I do think also, I mean, not to borrow a turn of phrase from John Schneider, I know we've kind of banned tipping your cap on this show, but I do think you do have to give at least a little bit of credit to the Twins, to your point about them laying off those splitters. And I mean, there were also some pitches that ended up as hits that were pretty good pitches, right? I mean, there was that high fastball to Harrison Bader that he smoked for a double. It was like 100 plus miles an hour off the bat. And he walked into second base. And then there was the home run to Wallner for the Twins' third run. There's the bottom six. He mashed that thing. It was a fastball inside at 96 miles an hour, and Wallner still put a really good swing on it. So, like, I'm kind of with you. I don't have a lot of negative items on Gausman outside of the fourth inning, and he still ended up with a quality start, right? So, I don't think it's anything to be super concerned about. Not that our caller Brendan was concerned, just that I think maybe some people might have been. But again, I think actually I give the guy a lot of credit for battling through it. Dave in Orangeville on the text line. We'll take this text and then take a break here, Nick. He says, on the topic of starting pitching, curious how you guys see Manoah factoring into this mix. Haven't heard a lot about him despite seeing him in the dugout with the guys versus Tampa a couple weeks back. Dave, I appreciate the call. I recall, I think Arden had this on Twitter, but I believe the progression plan for Manoah, and this was from John Schneider, is that Manoah is going to be facing live batters as soon as this coming week, I believe. I think it's like Monday or Tuesday, but he is going to be starting the progression towards facing live batters. So, I mean, I have no idea what Manoah is going to look like after really struggling and then having surgery, but I mean, you can't entirely discount him as a potential solution, because if he's even like 70% of the guy he was when he was like a Cy Young candidate, I mean, that is a potential solution, I would say.
It's just been so long. Right? Thing, like 2022 was the last time we saw that really strong version of Alek Manoah. And after that, you know, 2023 was a combination of poor health and poor performance. And then last year we saw five starts, and they were kind of truncated outings at that. So he really is a mystery box. Now, he's a mystery box with a lot of talent, and who has been very successful at the MLB level before. So he can't be dismissed. It's not like you called someone up from AAA who you've never heard of and like, let's give him a chance. Like,
right, right.
This is a guy who knows what it takes to succeed at this level and has done so. But it's just hard to speculate on what his stuff looks like. Is his velocity there? You know, there's a lot of concerns before he got injured about his trademark slider had lost a lot of its movement. And that was one of the bigger issues that had made him decline from 2022. How's that going to look? It's really, really difficult to say, but it is a nice thing to have in your back pocket, which is, as you mentioned, someone who's been a Cy Young candidate in the past, legitimately, you know, in 2022, a while ago, but not forever ago. You know, this isn't Max Scherzer where you're catching the very, very end of his career. Like, this is a guy who theoretically, at least physically, is in his prime and has had the success before. To have that guy coming back in your back pocket is a nice luxury, but I think it needs to be conceived of as a luxury, yes, not something you can really count on.
Yeah, like I'm not sure you can make your plans 100% based around what Manoah's rehab is going to look like, right? Because, I mean, the truth is you just never really know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of Brewers fans were like, oh, man, Brandon Woodruff is on his way back. And then he got, like, hit in the elbow in a minor league rehab start, and they put a pause on that. Shane Bieber, I'm sure Guardians fans were like, oh, man, Bieber's going to come back. And then he had some discomfort in the elbow during rehab start, and his recovery had to be put on pause. So, like, you just never really know when guys come back from surgery. Sometimes it's very successful. Sometimes it's less so. So I'm with you. And I think, too, even, like, in the most optimistic of cases, I got to think Manoah is still not coming back until what? Like, well after the deadline. Like, maybe before September, I would think. But if you get anything out of Manoah this year, I view that as a positive. But at the earliest I'm conceiving of is, I mean, the deadline's at the end of July, so like mid-August, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable deadline. That sounds like a reasonable timeline to me, which kind of goes to what you were saying, where you can't really make plans around it. And the deadline is when you're making your plans, right? Like, that's when you're thinking about acquiring players or shipping guys out. And we still don't know exactly where the Jays are going to be competitively at that moment, although their recent stretch makes it more likely they'll be at least hovering around 500. I think, if anything, that would be sort of a pretty negative outcome if they went four games under 500 or five from here to the deadline. That would be considered a pretty poor run for them. And yeah, Manoah is not someone you can plan around, but there is a chance that he comes back and he looks really good and he provides a huge boost for this team. That can't be dismissed, but it cannot be brought into your, you know, your broad plans for the team, because it's just unfair to put that expectation on him, to be honest.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. We'll go back to the phone lines, back to the text line after the break. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk. That's Nick. I'm Sho on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like a flatliner, you know. I think, you know, going back to the day we told him he was going to start or open, he was kind of like, okay. And he's kind of got that mentality about him, you know. Getting to know him in spring training a little bit, obviously a different animal than the regular season and making your major league debut and things like that. But he's got a very, very calm demeanor about himself. And that's what you really want in a relief pitcher. So it'll take some time, I think, some outings for him to really kind of feel that, you know, feel those nerves and feel that pressure. But he looks like, you know, the same guy every single situation you put him in so far.
That's John Schneider talking about Braden Fisher, who had an inning of relief in the eighth inning. Some really high leverage stuff for Braden Fisher. He had a strikeout. He faced three batters, did not give up a hit or a walk. So well done by Braden Fisher. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Nick Ashbourne, Sho Ali here with you. Still taking your calls, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. We're here for another 10 minutes or so. Before we go back to the phone lines, before we go back to the text line, Nick, let's get to the Bet365 standings update. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet. You can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. Well, it is still, you know, midday on a Saturday, so still some games going on. And actually, I believe, let me just double check here. Yeah, actually, only a handful of finals, actually, including our game. So it looks like the Yankees and Red Sox don't get going for another just under 2 hours. The Rays are still in action right now, and the Orioles are on the West Coast taking on the Athletics, so they don't get going until 10 Eastern. So a bit of a mixed bag when it comes to the standings right now, because some teams haven't gotten going. But let's take a look at the standings. If my computer would refresh, there we go. So the Yankees enter play 39-23. The Blue Jays, they improved to 35-29. The Rays are 34-29. They have also been one of the hottest teams in baseball. They are currently leading the Marlins, top of the fifth inning, 6-5. So we'll see if they do hold on there. The Red Sox are 30-35. Like I said, they're playing the Yankees tonight. And the Orioles are 25-37. And they had their six-game win streak snapped by the A's last night in Sacramento. But I mean, it's interesting, Nick. I mean, we had a conversation just a couple of weeks ago that you could conceivably win or win. You could come in second place in the American League East and still not make the playoffs. And it's funny because in this run the Blue Jays have gone on, they actually have a better record than every other team in the American League Central except for the Tigers, and are currently, at least right now, pending the result of the Rays game, sitting in sole possession of the second place in the American League East. Things turn pretty quickly.
And they're at the top of the wild card charts right now, which you would not have expected, again, a couple weeks ago. And people have different opinions about playoff odds, and it's fair because teams change a lot over time and they go on a big run and things change quickly. But I think it is worth noting that as recently as May 25th, this team had playoff odds of 25.2%, according to FanGraphs. And coming into today's game, it was 53.8%, and it's only will have increased with today's win. They are in a position where it is fair to now expect the Toronto Blue Jays to make the playoffs. There's no guarantee. If you're above 50%, that is not a guarantee you are making the playoffs. But it is, at that point, fair to say, more often than not, a team in this position with this group of players is likely to make the playoffs. And again, like, it felt for a long time this season like they had a shot. They were in the mix. They were one of the teams that could make the playoffs. And now, again, they haven't taken pole position by a huge margin by any means. It's not like they're way ahead of the pack or anything. There are plenty of teams fighting for this. The Blue Jays have not escaped that group, but they have gone from a conceivable playoff team to arguably a probable playoff team, which is pretty wild in a pretty short period of time.
Just before we go back to the phones, Nick, real quick, because we heard the clip from Schneider on Braden Fisher. Thoughts on Braden Fisher today?
I thought he's really fantastic. This is what he does, is he throws a ton of sliders and curveballs. He did not throw a single fastball in the outing. His hardest pitch was 88.8 miles per hour. And a lot of times when guys do that, it's because they just really don't have a heater to speak of. Whereas he does have a mid-90s fastball, but he just doesn't use that often. He uses it as a pick-and-choose weapon to steal a strike here or to catch guys off guard. But he's got a slider that's special. He's got a curveball that falls off the table. So far in his MLB career, he's got 17 strikeouts in 11.2 innings. Like, he's showing the ability to miss MLB bats already. He only has two walks in that time as well. It's too early to declare, like, this is a high-leverage reliever you can count on. Absolutely not. Like, he needs to establish more of a track record. But there's not a lot that he could have done in this time that he hasn't done. He's done, and again, as John Schneider speaking to his demeanor as well, that side of it, you know, it's a pretty interesting package at the moment. And it's hard to say where he'll end up by the end of the season, but the Blue Jays in recent years have really struggled to, whether it's starting pitching or relief pitching, bring people up from the minor leagues and have them contribute at even a passable level. And this year they're starting to do that on the relief side, not so much on the starting side,
right.
But they've brought guys up from AAA, you know, Paxton Schultz being another example, and have them, and Mason Fluharty, and have them give them good innings in relief, which is a really important thing to be able to do. We'll see how that carries forward, but that's turning a weakness into a strength, and that's one of the things that has made this a better season for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Let's go to the phones one more time before we get out of here. The last word on the phone line goes to Steve in Alexander, Manitoba. Steve, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind, man?
Thanks for having me, guys. I think I'm a little late to the party because the old Heinemann Kirk train has probably left the station, but I just wanted to pile it on a bit. I'm a big Danny Jansen guy, or was a big Danny Jansen guy. And coming into this season, man, I without him backing up Kirk, I was very worried. But what a luxury to have Heinemann come in and play like he has. And you got Kirk with his framing and everything, and Heinemann, like, holding runners, as you guys just said. And I'm just ecstatic about the fact that we have two very solid catchers, maybe – well, certainly the best 1-2 punch in the game, but two starting catchers at this point. Whether Heinemann can hold on, we don't know, but yeah, it's looking pretty darn good.
Steve, I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there was Steve brings up something too. I mean, about Danny Jansen, because I kind of, like, Steve was a Jano guy. I was a fan of his, and nice guy, always fun to talk to, always generous with his time for us on the network and here at the Fan. And I got to say, I was bummed when he moved on. Not just moved on, he would go to play for the Rays, right? I mean, that's tough, right? Especially playing for a division rival. But after he left, right, Nick, there was a question as to how much, like how many resources should be allocated towards the catching position, just generally speaking, right? Especially if you do believe, if you did believe at the time that Kirk is going to be asked to catch like 110, 115 games. And as we've spoken about before, how many catchers in baseball are being asked to do that with that type of load and then also are having pretty good results offensively? I would say the list is perilously small. So that the Blue Jays managed to identify Heinemann as someone that you could, they don't have to spend a lot of resources on, but still get good results out of. And to your point from earlier, I'm sure even if you put the truth serum in Ross Atkins, he wouldn't say like, oh, I expected over a 400 batting average and over 1,000 OPS, even in limited sample size by June 7th. I'm sure even he wouldn't say that. But yeah, I think it has helped swallow the pill of having a player like Danny Jansen, who I think was liked by a lot of people, not just myself and not just by Steve, but I think Jana was well liked. And now, I'm not saying you forget about him, but you know, you're able to stomach that loss a little more because Heinemann's been great, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, Heinemann's been better than you possibly could have expected, as we keep talking about here. The thing with Kirk coming into the season is there was some skepticism about him carrying this massive load. And people felt like, well, if you have Heinemann, who's truly unproven at the big league level and maybe more of a triple A guy for most of his career, then Kirk's got to play a lot or this is not going to work. And now, firstly, Heinemann's been so good that that paradigm has maybe shifted a little bit. But they have played Kirk a lot. Like, Kirk has appeared in 49 games already this season. So he's on pace to be in a lot of games. And he started 46 of them at catcher. So, again, he's going to blow by his career highs in these things. But I think there's also a level of belief that the team had in him. Like, not only is he an elite catcher who provides so much value when he play him, so as a result, playing him more is only good for your team. I think some of the skepticism was a little bit, you know, it's a little bit unfair. It's a little bit, to be honest, a little bit body type based. So people saw a guy who looked like that and said, is he going to hold up? And I'm not sure that was actually based in any kind of science. It was just sort of what people were throwing out there. And the reason that he hadn't played as many games in the past was often because Danny Jansen was a good player who justified having playing time. It wasn't necessarily that Kirk gets worn down, Kirk can't handle this load. It's like, we've got another dude who should probably play as well because he's really good, especially at some points offensively for Jansen when his power game was really going. So the idea that Kirk couldn't handle this load, I don't know if it was ever based on anything other than the fact that he hadn't done it already. But Kirk is a relatively young guy, and he's showing himself to be strong this season, again, both offensively and defensively. And the Jays are left with this really, really strong tandem. Now, if I'm going to quibble, I say the best catching tandem in the game is Kyle Raleigh and whoever. Like, a bag of baseballs and Kyle Raleigh is the best catching tandem in the game. But that being said, the Jays have to be extremely happy with where they are.
Quickly on the text line, David of the Six, keep stringing series wins together and 500 will be far in the rear view by August. Nice start to the road trip. There was one here from Sean in Cowtown who clarifies it is Calgary. He says another big comeback win. Bullpen is absolutely gold right now. Let's enjoy this. And let's see, Jeff and Sarnia, great to see players homegrown making an impact, not having to buy a bat. And then Joey and Bob Cajun. Is it just me or is the Jays starting to feel like the Leafs with them getting all these comeback wins? Let's not go there. You know, I say this as someone who cheers for the Leafs. Let's not make those comparisons. Not right now.
It's a tough moment to be making those comparisons. That's for sure.
I do think so. I do appreciate the other texts and all the calls. You guys are the best. But thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk and on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Cranros Control Centers in Elliott Lake and Sault Ste. Marie. Cranros proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Cranros Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. Julia Kreutz back in with me tomorrow to put a bow on the series. Blair and Barker back on Monday. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.